Recording in progress.
So we're about to start. I just want to check and see if the folks on the Zoom can hear us, and also to ask that you all sign in the Zoom and indicate your agency affiliation, if any. Thank you.
I can hear you.
Perfect.
All right. I will call to order the Champaign County Mental Health Board January 17th meeting. Can I get a roll call, please?
Lisa Liggins Chambers. Chris Miner. Molly McClay.
Molly is on the Zoom, and we will take a motion in a minute, entertain a motion to add her to the meeting after you get these guys.
Joe Omosagie.
Yeah.
Elaine Plencia.
Here.
Jen Straub. Jane Sprandle.
Here.
John Paul Joachim.
Here. And then Lisa just walked in as well. All right. With that, I will call for a motion to allow Molly McClay to attend the Champaign County Mental Health Board meeting virtually. Do I have a? Yeah, due to illness. Do I have a second?
A second.
All right. And then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. All right. Those for it have it. So Molly's allowed to attend virtually. With that, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the revised agenda. I'll let everyone have a minute to take a look at it.
The revision is the addition. I forgot to highlight it of under new business item D, and there is an addendum that was posted to the website, which is attached to your paper agenda. And I have it on this. I'll have it on the screen when it's time.
I make a motion to approve the revised agenda as presented.
I second the motion.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. Those for it have it. So next item is the Mental Health Board and DDB schedule and timeline. So I don't know if, Lynn, if you want to go over that.
Well, I learned some things at the conference, at our State Association conference in December, including that you should approve the meeting schedule once a year. And then after that, it is at the chair's discretion to make changes to the schedule. So the first page of it, which is page 3, is the one to approve.
All right, I'll let everyone take a minute to look at that. If there's any holidays or anything you see. The nice thing about Wednesdays is usually there's nothing that we have to really worry about. I think the March 20th one falls under spring break. So that might be the only issue, but I can't remember if it's that week. I'll be out. I will not be here. And then November 20th, that's not Thanksgiving week, is it? It's the week before. Is it? Okay. Yeah. And then usually we canceled the December 18th one in the future. We have that on the schedule, but hopefully we don't usually need that visit or that meeting. So, all right. Do I have a motion to approve the schedule?
Move to approve a schedule.
Okay. I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? All right. Those ayes have it. So next item is the, you know, the citizen input. So all are welcome to attend the board meeting to observe and offer thoughts during that this time. We'll limit public participation to 5 minutes per person and 20 minutes total. So if there's any county resident that wants to make any comments, now's the time. Is there anyone online?
No.
No. All right. So for the next item, we'll move on to the next item. That's just my comments. I know it's very cold today, so thank everybody for coming out. I know we have a lot to cover today. Basically, I'll just hold off on my comments this time and save them for next time. So I'll move on to Lynn for your comments.
Oh dear, I need to go into the control room and take that message off of your screen so that we can see speakers. Okay, I'll do that right after my comments. I need to not forget a few things as we go through the agenda. There are I would like to make broader, bigger picture comments, but at the end of the day, there are some changes. I have a decision memo in here about delayed audits, and there are a couple of additional pieces of information I'd like to share and not forget. And then there's draft personnel policy addenda for y'all to consider. And the DDB also has to approve anything related to personnel policy. So this morning they considered those three addenda and did make a change to one. So I have to remember not to forget to tell you all about that one. But at the start of the day, my thought was, I want to really make an effort to kind of lay out like as much positives and celebrate as many successes as possible, because this work is hard enough without me being like always dark and dreary. But if you want to be dark and dreary, I'm there for it. So I think we have a lot to do. There is a lot of very good and positive information in this packet. So I'm going to stop talking, fix that, and let the packet material speak for itself. Okay.
All right, thanks, Lynn. the next item on the agenda is the introduction of our newly appointed board member, Chris Miner. I want to thank you for joining the board, and I know you'll contribute greatly to the board and to the community. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of the group. So happy to have you.
Definitely. Thank you.
All right. With that, the next item is the approval of the Mental Health Board meeting minutes on pages 21 through 25. Just give everybody a few minutes to look at that. If there's any questions or any addendums, just let us know. All right. I will move to approve the Mental Health Board minutes from November 15, 2023. Is there a second?
A second.
Right. With that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All right. The ayes have it. The next item is the vendor invoice list on pages 26 through 51.
I did neglect in my comments to tell you something very important, which is that Dr. Maurer has resigned from the board. So it may take a while to find someone for that position because of the time of year, but I really enjoyed working with her. So anyway, I forgot to tell you guys that. Thanks.
Were there any questions about the invoice list? No. All right. With that, I'll move to approve the vendor invoice list on pages 26 through 51. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. With Elaine seconding, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right. The ayes have it. The next item is staff reports on 52 through 73.
Do we get to ask about the FOIA request? Sure. I just wondered what that.
It was, and Stephanie Howard Gallo worked on this with me. It was for records. I believe we were looking from the 1970s through the 80s. Maybe I've got the wrong decades, but everything we have from that time is still in paper. We don't have like microfiched paper records. There are also there are some records that don't have to retain that long, so I did take a look at what we have. There was nothing in the nature of the request. I think they sometimes people see the words mental health and think it's an agency that provides services or in some way would know about patient care, because it was about patient care and police communications with police. And we didn't have anything, so that was.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I've gotten that question from community members, thinking that that's what we do is provide
direct
mental health. Yeah. So.
But I have to admit that whenever I have an excuse to go into that closet and look at stuff from the 1970s, it's fascinating, and I always find like. That mental health board was working on pretty much the same issues you all are. Like, it's amazing.
I also want to thank Chris for pulling out the expo numbers in his report, because I asked that question, and I appreciate him doing that. So.
Hey, Leon, just a question. Even though Lynn stepped out, it was under her section. I know we had the independent contractors like Alex Campbell offering technical support for users of the online application and reporting system. What have the agencies reported with the interaction with the online system, with like the updates and everything? Do we feel like agencies are like noticing an improvement, or like it's easy, that it's more user friendly?
That's a pretty great question. My interaction with agencies have been pretty positive in terms of just working with Alex. I'm sure, we do have agencies on the call here who can speak to that maybe towards the end, but I think Alex has been a pretty solid asset in terms of just helping us, helping agencies navigate through the online system.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just wondering how agencies have been doing with the updated system and using Alex Campbell for technical support.
Oh, that's yeah.
For, you know, with the new applications this year, yeah. For funding, obviously we're going to be looking at the new requests in February, I think, is it on the schedule? Yeah. So I was just wondering how that was going with the application process and how agencies have been interacting with the new system. If they've had difficulties, if it's been better this year than previous years or not. So, yeah, Leon answered some of those questions.
Well,
so.
It's been hauntingly quiet. So that's either things are going really well or people aren't doing it yet.
Okay.
Because the applications aren't due till February 12th, and for some experienced agencies, it is not going to take very long. So we just kind of... Yeah, I heard part of what Leon said, and he's right. Thank you for answering that part, but... We haven't had a lot of calls for help yet. Just there have been a few things that early users have warned us about, little things here and there. We've been able to fix them ourselves so far, but that is a great question.
And we know he's free that week that the application is due.
I do not know that, but we are.
All right. Any other questions, comments? All right. With that, I will move on to new business, which is a notification of funding availability for fiscal year 2025. Basically, just for information, it appeared on the News Gazette on November 26th and the 29th. Yeah, it is very official looking. And then after that, I will also, with that, I'll move on to the draft of the CCDDB and CCMHB personnel policy addenda on pages 76 through 95.
So it's pretty straightforward, and I tried to keep it simple in the memo, too. I wanted to make sure that the key items are the Mental Health Board, by state law, has authority over its own staff. And the DD Board also does, and the two boards have an intergovernmental agreement regarding how to manage a staff and how to split costs. So with those things in place, we're still kind of... county department, like it's, we say semi-autonomous, and there are a couple of reasons for that. But so for that reason, and also for protecting the rights of our employees, we want to make sure that our personnel policies are as aligned with county, or conform as closely as possible with the county's personnel policies, which were amended a few times in the last few years to accomplish the first couple things, the policy against discrimination, harassment, sexual misconduct, and then the equal employment opportunity, background checks, bereavement leave, and paid parental leave. And then last May, when the public health emergency ended, the sort of like becomes advisable to have a telework policy if you're going to continue to have hybrid work. And we do continue, we would like to continue it. So for that policy, we looked at what the Regional Planning Commission has been doing and modified that policy to match ours. I had a lot of input from the state's attorney's civil division chief on that one, before, during, and after the draft that you see here. The other two are just very much, it's what the county added to their own personnel policies, but I've moved your authority into the places where the county board or county executive would have authority, and then myself instead of where it might say department head or county executive. With the anti-harassment, that's a little more complicated because we are such a small team that I wanted to make sure, and I think probably everyone knows that grievance procedures are notoriously inadequate. So if one of our staff had a grievance, I wanted to make sure that they have the option to go to someone other than me. Mm-hmm. Not like, first of all, if I'm the problem, but also if they are concerned that I might not follow up on it. So there are a couple of avenues in that. So that in that way, that's a, the most different from what the county does. There's lots of options. So and they include county staff as options, but also importantly, board members are protected under this policy from harassment by other county officials. So, and that's a little bit tricky too, like what, how you do the grievance. Like you may want to include me and the state's attorney, or, you know, if the state's attorney is the problem, me and the clerk. Anyway, so that one's a little complicated, but they are as close to the county's addenda as possible, and then telework is as close to RPCs as we could make it, but with it's there, that's a huge workforce. We are just six people, so the some of the language they had in there didn't apply to us. We didn't need it. So anyway, I've said too much. And I presented those as three separate actions for y'all to take.
And did you say that the DD board had some suggestions also on these policies?
Thank you. This morning they approved all three policies, but they changed the title of the second one to include paid parental leave. So, and I thought, yeah, okay, that's important.
It was already in there. It was just clarifying that it was in there.
Like, let's go ahead and value that by putting it in the title. So I really appreciated that. But anyway, if you all have any changes that you want to make to any of the three, what I would simply take that addendum back to the DD board for approval at their next meeting. So it's not like just because they've approved it, that's a done deal and you have to. But to share just also, I apologize. I wanted to get the travel policy in front of you because we have one that was adopted in 2019. But similarly, the county has updated their accounting system, their credit card policy, their travel policy, their purchasing policy. And some of that was to align with IRS standards and efforts the county is making to reach the generally accepted the government accounting standards. So these are things we also want to do, but I didn't get it done. It was just got too late in the day. So that one will be coming in February, and then I can't touch it yet, but we know that there are changes coming in Illinois employment law, which will affect the personnel policies of both the county and our own. And so at some point, once we understand how those changes affect it, it's from the Paid Leave for All Workers Act. So we're still waiting for guidance on what those changes will look like. But anyway, but I don't think they would affect these addenda. They might make things simpler. But anyway, I don't know when that will happen or when we will propose a revision of that policy.
Thought I did. There. Yeah, I just wanted something clarified for me. On page 78 in the first paragraph of the addendum A, you have a list of the kinds of discrimination not to be tolerated. And it says order of protection status. Is that for one person, both people? I mean, there are two people involved in an order of protection status.
You know, I don't know. I think this comes from federal law, so I assume both. But I don't.
Just didn't know what that was covering there.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I just, when I saw it, I assumed both. I didn't think about it more deeply, but you might be right that
but
it is.
But they're two very different positions. Yeah. So if you could find that out at some point, it'd be nice to know what we're protecting there. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think even despite that, I think because it's the writing is not something that we created, it's something that is, you said, from a national standard or a national law.
When they developed these addenda, they were working with an HR company that we actually work with too, but I didn't want to spend the thousands of dollars to get that advice. But that includes attorneys, and also the state's attorney worked on these with them. So I didn't change those essential elements at all. But that doesn't mean I can't ask for clarification. They may they may say, oh,
yeah,
right.
They might.
Yeah, I thought you said this was to conform more with the state policy anyways, correct?
It's the first two, the county developed
the county.
These to conform with, I believe,
federal okay.
rules, but there may be some state too. The stuff that's coming our way is new state laws. But we also, we want to align with county practice too, because we are using their federal employee ID number, and we are, the payroll administration is done on our behalf by the county. So in all the ways that we can, we want to behave like county staff, but also have the be entitled to the same protections.
Okay. I mean, I agree. I think we should be in alignment with what county is doing, what the state is doing, what the federal government is doing. And, you know, I think Elaine raises a good question. I'm still okay approving the personnel policy and then just following up with that. And then if there's any, you know, addendums that we need to make, we could bring that up at the next meeting, if that's okay. Change the language, yeah. If that's okay with everybody.
Can we talk about telework? Or is it too soon? Are we still on?
No, we can
talk
about it.
Okay.
Right.
Under temporary teleworking arrangements on page 95, there are two arrangements. In the first, under temporary teleworking arrangements, it says unanticipated emergencies, and then it says emergency dismissal or closing procedures, and then the definition, I guess, of what emergency dismissal or closure procedures is in that next paragraph. So what I'm wondering is, how is that different than unanticipated emergencies? You know, are they talking about death for unanticipated emergencies? Maybe that should be clear, too, because in the last paragraph, it talks about floods, terrorism, pandemics, wind, snow, you know, but I think maybe it's just me, but I was a little bit trying to figure out what would be unanticipated emergency.
So I, my understanding, and this is, I worked on this with the civil division chief for a while. Those are the unanticipated emergencies. It could be personal emergencies, but I think for most personal emergencies, we want to just take time off from work. But there can be, you know, some of it, we have the equipment to work remotely. Almost all of our job tasks can be done remotely. So if a person had an unanticipated family emergency that was going to take them out of town, they could do some work. So I would include that in this too. But this last paragraph really is about when Brookings is closed because of things that are outside of everybody's control, what do we do? So Brookings is the traditional work site for our staff. And if we can't be here, but we can work at home, do we work at home? So what he suggested that I do is consult with county about the closure of Brookings and see what everybody else is expected to do. So typically on a snow day, I can work, but it is weather. And sometimes weather makes it impossible to leave the house or be in the house or access the internet, right? So this is, you know, also this is supposed to capture that whole, like, the pandemic. So it's kind of like that paragraph is grabbing a very large, very diverse set of of circumstances that are outside of our control and just adding some flexibility. Like if remote work is still appropriate and a person would prefer to work over taking time off, then we have the discretion to do that. But anyway. And, you know, just like interestingly, I've been just as sick. Like there's some things going around that are just as bad. I'm not contagious right now and I'm not sick right now, but I mean, it's, I know that the public health emergency is over, but there really are occasions where I need to be by myself in the office, nobody else around. Is that?
So one is for more individual and the other one is for Brookings. Okay.
I mean, Brookings doesn't close very often. It really is, I think the sheriff typically calls it, and it will have to do with hazardous road conditions, so that, like, that's everywhere in the community usually. So it doesn't happen very often, though, thankfully. But and also maybe pandemics hopefully don't happen very often, but I'm not counting on that.
I think probably an easy example would be if it is really snowy or there's icy areas, but Champaign is fine, but the rural areas are not, and people that are working live in smaller areas that the roads aren't as clear, they can't get in, so then they would have to work telework, whereas the Brookings would still be open. That often happens at our office, but yeah. So, like, the people that live in the area that are closer that have easier access that don't have icy roads come into work, and then other people work from home because of access. But then, like you said, you know, internet may be an issue, so may not be able to work anyways just because they won't have internet. But yeah. Any other questions about the three motions?
I wanted to make a comment on the bereavement leave. I was really heartened to see paid bereavement leave for a lot of different issues and unpaid bereavement leave. I understand that some of what is in this policy is coming from federal and or state law, and I remember reading about the addition of inclusion around infertility and pregnancy loss in bereavement leave, which I think is a major step forward, especially in terms of recognizing how these are both underserved, I think underserved and underrecognized areas of mental health that really deserve more support. I ultimately think I would like to see those, the bereavement leave around miscarriage and unsuccessful ART and adoption to be considered to be a paid bereavement leave as well, but I understand that part of this is alignment with other policies, but I just wanted to comment on that as something that I think is both a step forward for the way we think about bereavement and broader way, and also somewhere maybe we can go for the future.
Thank you, Molly. And I know we talked about it very briefly, and maybe I want to share with everybody. If you look at the paid bereavement leave, this is a very limited, this is extra time off beyond the time off that we accrue as vacation, personal, or sick time. This is a separate type of time off, and it can only be used directly following a death, which in my experience is not when we need the time off. But we have lots of vacation, holiday, personal, and usually flex time to cover it. So I think the whole bereavement policy leaves a lot to be desired, because that's really not, in the days directly after a death, I'm probably going to come to work and then the next week be working on the estate. So, I mean, unfortunately, we've all had some experience with this in the last couple of years, and so we end up using our other time off anyway. So I think like the circumstance that Molly brings up is important to us and would be absolutely be covered by other paid time off. And the one of the important changes that's happening in state law is that the employer has no right to ask why a person wants time off, just what kind of time off they need to use. So what bucket of benefits it comes from. So I think for the situation that you're talking about, that might be even more respectful that the employer doesn't get to know that. So I don't know. And I know that's not a great response. It's not satisfying, but I feel that there are other problems with the bereavement policy too. Like it's not very culturally responsive either. So.
Yeah, I definitely think there's room to make additional updates kind of in the future, kind of looking at it from a longer term basis. I could see like instances under the unpaid bereavement leave being more like in some ways more likely to fit under that immediate time off after an event, especially if somebody undergoing any of these kinds of circumstances had to have a major medical procedure or something, you know, that would sort of count as like medical, but also bereavement. So just some additional thoughts, but I agree. There's various other linguistic areas of the policy that could probably be improved. And I appreciate the caveat of, like, no one has a right to ask for a lot of detail about why.
For us to make changes in a policy like this, I'd be happy to take this on. I would actually have to do it with the county because we can't go beyond what they do, but this might be of benefit to them as well. So I could, you know, if we approve this now with the recognition that it's a less than perfect policy, I could start that conversation with the HR person there.
I have a question on the bereavement leave. The 48 hours notice, they need to give 48 hours advance notice of an intention to take unpaid bereavement leave. I think the concern for me is, can we anticipate? I guess in some situations you can, and I hate to smile about it, but I guess you do know in some situations 48 hours in advance of someone's death, but that's a little hard for me to comprehend.
Or is that more like you've already taken the initial few days off for the actual death and you're taking some unpaid time to continue to grieve?
See, I think this is kind of like what happens with a long FMLA. Like first you exhaust all your paid time off. We have never had a situation where someone didn't have enough paid time off available. So if we get in that situation, wow, I'm going to be sorry because these are real shortcomings. And it could happen that a person could need so much time off that they would get into this area where it's either unpaid bereavement or it's unpaid I think it's the 12 weeks of FMLA. I think is that the entitlement? But anyway, we've never had to deal with it, so I don't know. But yeah. We do have pretty good benefits.
All right. any other questions, comments, or discussion? All right. Do I have a motion to approve the first motion? Yeah.
Thank you all for the discussion. I'm sorry, these are not better policies.
All right. I will move to approve the attached draft CCMHB, CCDDB personnel policy addendum A, policy against discrimination, harassment, and sexual misconduct. Is there a second?
I will second that.
All right. Any discussion? No, seeing none. All those approve, say aye. Oh, wait, do we need a roll call for this? Or no? Okay. All those approve, say aye. Aye. All those against, same motion. All right. Those approve, win. So we'll move on to the second motion. Is there anyone that would like to make that motion?
Ooh, and
oh, sorry. And then at the end of the title, add paid parental leave and paid parental leave to that title, because that's what CCDDB board added to the title. All right, I'll move a motion to approve the attached draft CCMHB, CCDDB personnel policy addendum B, equal employment opportunity, background checks, bereavement leave, and paid parental leave. Is there a second for the motion?
I will second.
All right. Any discussion? With that, all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed? All right, approves have it, so the motion is approved. And then the third motion is I'll move for a motion to approve the attached draft CCMHB, CCDDB personal policy, addendum C, telework. Is there a second?
I will second that.
All right. And then any discussion? Seeing none, I'll move those, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against, same sign. All right. The approves have it. So the motion is approved. The next item is on page 96. It is delayed audits and reviews.
Context?
Yes, please.
So I give a little context and then the updates that I promised earlier. So this is really just an update which needs to be updated. Okay, I'm looking for it on the screen here. So we have, for the last 3 years, had a little bit later audit deadline. For years and years and years, the audit deadline was it 120 days? It was like late October if your fiscal year ended June 30th. So you had till late October to get the audit done, and there were so many problems for organizations to get them done that quickly, including getting documentation from state funders. So it was, we're seeing the pinch of not enough CPA firms available to do nonprofit audits, and those organizations who were comfortable doing nonprofit audits not being able to stay fully staffed. So and we have like more nonprofits in this county than most. So there was, that was really important. There were additional delays related to COVID. So we changed the policy 3 years ago. I wanted to just kind of give you an update. We also changed the requirements in November, but those don't change the deadlines. They just change some consequences and practices around that. I just, on page 97, need to give you an update. I made a mistake. There were 11 delayed for PY21, 12 delayed for PY22, and 9 delayed for PY23. And that doesn't count the audits that we did not receive from 3 agencies who are not funded right now. Those audits also didn't come, but I'm not counting them. So I want to say there is improvement. I also, on the very first bullet point there is 9 of the 22 required were submitted by the deadline. I didn't name the 9. If you want me to, I can name them off the top of my head, I think. Do you want it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, see you at home. The Community Service Center of Northern Champaign County, Crisis Nursery, Cunningham Children's Home, Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, DSC, Races, Terrapin Station, Sober Living, and the Up Center. Then, right after that, right after the deadline passed, we got four more audits, and those are listed a little further down on the page, that had been done in 2023, but for various reasons were not successfully transmitted to us. Those are Rosecrans, Champaign County Healthcare, Consumers, Family Service, and First Followers. So that's a lot. That's good. And we are still in the process of reviewing most of those. They take quite a long time. I really like reading audits, but I don't really understand them, so it takes me a while. And we have a CPA who helps us get through them, and Chris Wilson and Leon Bryson and Stephanie Howard Gallo also are looking at them. So, you know, we're not done, but that's a pretty happy result. Then Grow had informed us before of a delay in the production of they owe a financial review, not an audit, because of the amount of revenue. The cause of the delay is so lovely that I wanted you guys to know about it. The cause of the delay is that someone made a donation, and the bank is not giving them adequate information about that donation for their auditor to finish the review. Isn't that great? So they meant to ask you for a waiver of the payment suspension, but they didn't get that to me until like just very late Monday, which was past when we could post it. But I thought they were going to, so on page 100, there is a suggested motion, and Stephanie Howard Gallo and I have looked at their first note on page 101, and then their second, the documentation they provide from the auditor on page 102, and feel that if you want to waive the payment suspension for them, if you want to take that up as an action, you can. The other decision that I offered on page 100, this is also optional. You do not have to. These are just things. I'm very worried when we have late audits that if they go later than when we start reviewing applications, that we might be wasting time reviewing applications. So if we end up with a ton of applications to review, I would like to have lower priority on those for which we have not received an audit, but you don't. It's just a suggestion. So those two motions are on page 100. I think the rest of the memo is very self-explanatory. Thank you, Leon. He just sent me a message in my mind. Page 98. There is an important follow-up that I have to share with you, and that is of the three agencies that are not currently funded and did not submit audits, we were waiting for other things from them. The Urbana Neighborhood Connections Board and Director acknowledged that there was some unspent funding from last year, even though they don't have an audit for us. They see it, they agreed, and they did deliver a check. So I didn't have that information. Well, it hadn't happened when I finished the memo in the board packet, but it did happen last week. And Leon Bryson had spent quite a bit of time with the agency director, and it seems like it was a very civil, nice discussion, and so I just want to say credit where credit's due, right? Okay, I've talked enough. There you go.
So just to clarify, for those 11 delayed PY21 audits.
It says, PY21, yeah.
Yeah, so those are 2 years old, 3 years old?
We got those. We're not waiting for any more of those.
Oh, okay, because it said 11 delayed.
Yeah, this is each year. I was just telling how many were late.
Oh, during each that year. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, it isn't a very clear sentence. But to be fair, we are still waiting for a couple of PY22. Well, is that true? Just one PY22 still. And they're working on it still, but they're not currently funded. Okay.
Thanks for the clarification.
Sorry.
Yep. All right. From my perspective, I would postpone the request to uncancel That's a different.
That's the next one.
Oh, the next one. Okay.
Yeah, this is item C.
Oh, sorry.
The addendum is a separate issue.
So for the two motions, so the motion to approve additional time for the board and staff to review approval and subsequent PY 2025 contracting with any applicant whose audit or review remains outstanding as of February 12th, 2024.
The purpose is just if we start reviewing applications on February 12th, 2024 at 4:30 p.m. The application system closes. I will be at conferences after my meetings. I will sit in the hotel room and figure out with Leon and Kim's help which applications were successful. We will finish making lists for you for the board packets, which need to be produced the next day. And then we will start the review of applications. So my concern is that if there are audits I haven't seen yet by that day.
You can make a recommendation at that point because you need to review everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and this isn't to say they would be delayed, but just like in last year, you gave us extra time. But we didn't need it.
That's right. I remember that now.
Yeah.
Just because there might be questions that come up after the audit is submitted and clarification of anything.
And because you have, there have been years where you didn't have an audit until June, but you made a decision about funding in May. Mm-hmm. And then the audit that came in June suggested that the money wasn't being used appropriately. Mm-hmm. So now you have, now you're funding the agency for another year. Like that's, you know, I'm sorry to be so specific, but we can get ourselves into jams like that. But I do try to get to the audits as soon as possible. But I'm just really concerned that if they come, you know, like on March 31st, if we get them all then, that's also like we have about 3 days left to finish doing all of the reviews of applications at that point. And it, so... I don't know. We didn't need the extra time last year, which is why I'm saying maybe we don't worry about it.
But yeah, it is.
It just covers our bases. So.
But it's possible that once the window closes, we could still have outstanding audits and things of like that. So if I'm following correctly, we wouldn't review those requests until pretty much all the paperwork is submitted. So are we going to get to a situation where we have agencies who don't have paperwork turned in and maybe we'll miss out on funding because of that? Okay, I had to say it out loud.
That's my understanding, yeah.
And I think the way that you all handled it last year is we did have some stuff that came in late, but we were able to review it fully, and you were able to do some funding awards. They came a little bit later, but you did it. And there was also – we had to wait for an adjustment to the revenue – to the anticipated revenue, and then we knew we would have more money. And then, remember, then the adjustment went down again. So, anyway, is that helpful?
Yeah, that was helpful. Yeah.
It's more efficient. Work with what you have. It's more efficient, and we can solve case-by-case things later if we have to, so... And we also reward those who got everything in. makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think one is, you know, in previous years when I was on the board, we had more than sufficient funding to cover all the requests. And now we're unfortunately running into an era where we have, you know, more requests than we have funding for, and we have to make tough decisions. And I think one of the things last year was just triaging, you know, what we can fund, what should need, or I mean, obviously everything needs to be funded, but like what is going to be, for me, when I was making decision, when I was making my vote, was what is going to be the biggest bang for the buck, and also what agencies are showing consistency in being accountable and following up and, you know, making sure that they have everything in order. Obviously, you know, we were able to fund agencies that submitted the applications either late or didn't have their paperwork till later, and we had to make decisions after staff was able to look over everything, and then we were able to look at the information and make a decision. So, you know, that may or may not be the case this year. We may or may not have funding later. But I think this kind of gives, one, the staff enough time to look at all the information and make, you know, an educated recommendation, and also, you know, puts the staff in a place where they are not going to be burning out with the demands of having to, you know, look at everything within a time frame that is shorter than expected for them, because, you know, there is a deadline for a reason, so that they have the appropriate time to review all the applications and make the appropriate recommendations in time for our meetings. So I would move to approve that, the first motion, but I open up to discussion. But yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. Did you want to say something? You can go. No. Just a quick question, just so I can understand. So no matter when these applications are submitted, they will get funding as long as we have the money?
No. So we still make that choice. Yeah.
Because I was going to say, what's the purpose of a deadline if some come in late?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In the past, we still have said yes from when I've started in early 2020 and late 2019, but I started December 2019. Oh yeah, a couple months later we were no longer doing in person, but we always had enough money to fund everything, but then things change. So I feel like we've only had a very few handful that were late, and then there was things that we followed up on, and this last year there was quite a few more than we've had. I remember First Followers was one that we had some.
That was a few years ago.
Not last year. That was the first one. Yeah, and then last year it was Wynn, and there was two others that I'm.
Last year there were four.
Oh, four.
And three of them had something in common, which was interim directors who really were not.
Don Meyer Boisinger's Club. That's
they weren't very familiar with our processes, and they were trying to get replaced. So that's not to say it was an excuse, but thank you. That was a really good question. But so my concern, I have two concerns, and that is, it's just, we make a commitment with this important dates thing. It's not really binding, but this is a schedule that's essentially, it's got the agency deadlines, and it's also got our staff deadlines. And so I guess what I'm trying to do by this suggested motion is to say some of these deadlines are going to be really hard to meet if we have too much to do and it's all different things. Like if we're reviewing audits and reviewing applications all at the same time. We used to review audits in November and December, and then we would be done reviewing audits, and then we could start the business of reviewing applications. So we've kind of put ourselves, by extending that audit deadline, we've created a very difficult situation already. But when the audits are later than that, it overlaps with the review applications, and I think that people put a lot of time into the applications, and they deserve to be read thoroughly, and you deserve for us to give you our best opinions about them. I mean, you have to make all the decisions, but we need to provide you the best information. And I just want to make sure that we're not compromising that. But then that's conditioned by, we have a whole bunch of two-year contracts this year that don't have to be submitted and reviewed. So that's a blessing, and that might be, things might balance out anyway. Is that okay?
Is there any penalty for these late audits? Do they get reduced funding the next time around, or is it just?
It's basically what us as a board decides, and we don't have to, I mean, we don't. We can withhold payments. We can cancel contracts depending on how late things are. You know, and even for like applications when they come in past the deadline, we don't have to say yes. We can just say no and say sorry. Like, we're not going to reopen the application process. In the past, we have, and it's hard. And then it's a question of fairness too, then, to other agencies that are doing things on time.
Public notice says no late applications will be accepted. It said that for several years because of previous DD board and mental health boards not, you know, being bombarded with requests to allow late applications, and very much in the spirit of what you're saying is, what is the point of deadlines? But so they asked us to start making that statement in the public notice, and so it's been in the rules, it's in the priorities document. So the consequence for late audits is this. Payments are withheld automatically for 3 months, and then after 3 months, if the audit is still not submitted, the contracts are canceled. So in November, your rule changed slightly so that we do not automatically cancel the contracts after that 3 month point. We bring it to the full board for a decision. So that, but that's 3 months. And if your CPA firm starts working on tax clients in March, this has been the cause for those longer delays that they have to turn their attention to other things. So it's a difficult, I mean, it's not entirely an agency's fault. It is really, this is a difficult system, and our timeline might just need to be completely revised at some point to get us doing the reviews in the fall instead of the spring, so that we can look at audits in the spring. It's just, then your contracts would have to start January 1st instead of July 1st. So it'd be a big change. But those are the only consequences. The payment suspension, which for a small organization, the loss of 90% or 99% of their payments is, you know, death by loss of cash flow.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't trying to be punitive or anything, yeah. But there has to be some limit to what we're going to let these people get away with. Especially if someone's doing a great job, that's okay. But if they're not doing a great job, well, then they should have a little less leniency when it comes to due dates.
And kind of a informational and then a reminder. So this year we made the open application time frame longer. So when we did that, I was like, absolutely no late audits. And I am sure that is in the minutes somewhere. Or not audits, excuse me, applications. So we, how, 2 extra weeks or how much long? Okay, so 2 extra weeks to kind of get those applications in. Because, yeah, I kind of said, you know, Lisa said, why have a deadline if we're not going to adhere to it? And have I voted, yeah, we'll repost it. But I said, I'm not this year, so I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I would be in favor of the first motion.
Okay.
If everyone else.
Okay. I make a motion to approve additional time for the board and staff review, approval, and subsequent PY 2025 contracting with any applicant whose audit or review remains outstanding as of February 12th, 2024.
I'll second the motion. Any discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All right. Ayes have it. So the motion is approved. And then we don't.
You don't really have a request from the agency, but knowing the circumstance for GROW in Illinois and having the documentation in there, they would like the waiver of payment suspension. So if you wanted to, you could take that up by filling this in. They're not doing an audit, they're doing a financial review.
So just clarify that one more time.
The second motion would be, so like when I wrote this, I wasn't sure, like we need to get this done almost 2 weeks before the meeting, in order to get everything together. So I wasn't sure who might ask for the waiver of the payment suspension, and Grow has come close to asking for the waiver of payment suspension, but it isn't explicit in the request, in the letter.
So if we don't do anything, what would happen for them?
Their payments remain suspended. This is about the bank not giving their CPA the information. So I don't know how long it's going to take for that to change. So.
And then how late is the financial review?
Well, on page 102, the CPA is anticipating end of January 2023 okay. for the work. So that would, there would be no need for you to act on it if it really did come that soon. So the payment would be released anyway, like right at the same time.
Okay.
So it could be that there's really no need to do anything. I just wanted to share this one because it was the only request I had at the time of this packet.
Okay. Do we want to put the waiver in until the end of February? This way, in case it does happen, we have a meeting at that point, and then we can reassess if new issues are coming up.
So you could...
I think that's good, but I think we need to somewhere in here put, like, must be received by...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a way to do it, where you can say January, January and February payments. So what date would you be making the February board packet?
The February 9 would be a great day to have the materials, because as it turns out, the packet takes some time to put together. On February 12, I'll be putting it together because we have to wait till the evening of February 12 for the news of who was able to apply for funding. But the more stuff I have by February 9, the better.
I mean, overall, how do people feel about February 9? I mean, again, it's kind of like, do we even really need to do this? But part of me feels like their request is because something, they were blessed, and it's just a matter of a financial institution getting back to their accountant. I mean, they're really stuck right now. So I don't know, the 9th, I mean.
Well, they didn't make the request, so we'd have to take that language out, right, and just say you'd have to say to approve a waiver for Grow Illinois, but not their request. Motion to approve the contract requirement. Yeah, if you just say motion to approve a waiver for Grow Illinois
okay.
of the contract requirement, the payments be withheld
would you say requirement that January and February payments be withheld, an agency board approved independent mm-hmm. CPA firm financial review has not been submitted by February 9th and to authorize the staff?
That would be, if you don't even have to give the date, February 9th, with that, if you say January and February payments without.
Yeah.
Right?
So this way we can just discuss it at the next meeting if there's any mm-hmm. issues that arise.
So you would be saying motion to approve waiver for Grow in Illinois of the contract requirement that January and February payments be withheld? If an agency board approves independent CPA firm financial review has not been submitted, and to authorize CCMHB staff to release January and February payments as scheduled. You might notice the form of the motion has changed a little bit from last year. This is something else I learned in December from at our state association conference from some attorneys, that you do two. You authorize a contract and you approve us to enter into the contract with the agency. So the motions are going to look a little bit different. Yeah.
This makes no grammatical sense as it is, though.
Okay.
So.
She's an editor.
I was like, Elaine's going to
make the motion.
Right. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I mean, that phrase, if an agency board approved, that's us. I don't know who that is, an agency board.
Their board. Grows.
Oh, yep. Oh, we have to change that.
Yeah, we don't want to see the audits until, or the in this case the review, until their board has approved it.
Okay. Motion to approve. Contract requirement that payments can be withheld. Okay, so we just have to, after we took out the request, then we just have to put January and release January and February payments as scheduled. Right. Okay, so let me try this aloud and see if it makes sense. Okay, so I would move to approve a waiver for Grow Illinois of the contract requirement that payments be withheld if the Grow Board approved independent CPA firm financial review has not been submitted, and to authorize CCMHB staff to release January and February payments as scheduled. Is that it?
I think that's perfect.
Okay.
I will second that motion.
All right. Any discussion? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Do you have to do a roll call?
Oh.
It's money.
Oh, it is money. That's right. So can we have a roll call, please? Thank you for picking that up.
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
I forgot what I'm supposed to say.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Chris Miner?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes.
Joe Omosage?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
James Brandel?
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim?
Yes. All right, the motion is approved.
Whoa.
All right.
So, I'm sorry to make so many comments. It is a board meeting. It should be a board discussion, but I just want to tell you that I have so much anxiety when I bring you items that require action, but I don't provide a motion because of exactly what you went through just now. Like, it's really not, it's not ideal. And that's one of the problems with, like, receiving the requests so late. If I don't have time to contemplate the request and come up with a potential action for you, you have to do this. So thank you. Okay. It is the addendum.
Yeah, to the packet. Is the next item is the agency request for consideration. It's the addendum to the packet that's been posted on January 12th. With a formal request from Promise Healthcare that the PY25 contract not be canceled and action is requested. You can pull that up. So, you know, I guess this is what I was going to talk about earlier. I didn't realize this is the portion now, but from my perspective, I would move, you know, the audit was originally due on June 30th, and then we extended the deadline and multiple times, and then we moved it to December 27th because there was some issues with the audit and getting it done, and they were working with the firm to get it done on time, and it looks like it is not completed. So now we are, we have held 6 months of payments, correct? And so if we do nothing, the payments from January on will not be withheld. So we have a decision of whether we want to uncancel those payments and withhold them, or from my perspective, I would postpone doing anything until we have the audit and staff has time to review it and then make a decision. Because if we, you know, withhold those payments, that is going to continue, and we don't know when that will end, and then we'll have to keep making that decision further and further into the future. You know, that money is in the fund, so if the audit does come in, you know, that money has been set aside for funding this. So I would be okay going back and retroactively, you know, fulfilling those payments. But we have to get the audit. We have to cross our T's and dot our I's. We have to make sure that the money is being used appropriately and that we're holding our agencies accountable. That would be my thought, is to postpone and then make a decision once we have information. But I'm open to discussion. Or if, Lynn, if you wanted to elaborate.
I mean, these are both two-year contracts, so that gives you some flexibility. First of all, they don't have to submit applications right now, so this earlier action of holding off on reviewing applications does not apply to these two contracts. I think what you've proposed is that you wait until we have the audit to decide about January 1st and on. But as you said, the money is budgeted. So it can, I mean, the money is budgeted for even PY25. So is there anything I should add? I felt like you got it.
I guess another thought I had on that too is, it is a very sad situation, but I think there's more incentive now to really get on that CPA farm, because now we're in a bigger mess. And just, you know, and I know they've went through a lot of changes with financial officers and stuff, but it's a little bit of a long-term thing. And so I totally support postponing a decision, because it just seems like we keep each month, every other month, we're like, okay, let's kick the can a little farther down. And so it's very unfortunate, but maybe that'll get the CPA firm moving a little quicker. I know there was some conversation in December about even having their board approve the audit if it got in. At this point, every board member needs to be like, once you have, we'll have an emergency meeting. I mean, I guess I've been a school board president. We did stuff like that. If it meant money, post it. You have a meeting 48 hours later. So I hate to say it, but we gotta, you know, do what we have to do to protect the resources.
I agree.
All right,
I also agree completely. Like, the audit is essentially the information we need to make the decision. So trying to make any decision before we have it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I agree with the urgency piece around, you know, urgency is needed on this matter.
All right. With that, I will move for a motion to postpone the request from Promise Healthcare that the PY24 and PY25 contracts not be canceled until an audit has been submitted, and our staff has had time to review it. Do I have a second?
I will second that motion.
Any discussion? All right, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those, oh wait, since there's money, I guess we have to do a roll call, because it's a contract. Let's do a roll call just to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
Can I get a roll call, please?
Sure. Chris Miner?
Yes.
Molly McClay?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Alain Plancia?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Lisa Liggins-Chambers?
Yes.
Jean-Paul Joachim?
Yes. All right, with that, the motion to postpone the request has been approved. With that, we'll move on to old business, which is the evaluation capacity building project on page 103.
Good evening, everyone. I'm here, and my colleague, Rachel Jackson Gordon, is virtual, so we're both here. And we'd like to open it up to hearing any questions, any thoughts, reflections you have on the report that's in the packet.
I just have one. Thank you for this nice report. Very, very good. Is this something you plan to do every year, periodically? I mean, this kind of assessment. I didn't know if this is like the big report, you know, for
right.
several years or what.
Well, actually, this report wasn't in our deliverables, but we thought we'd deliver it to you since you wanted it. But it'll be part of our annual report. What I would say is that we've spent some time, like we had stated in our proposal, to do a needs assessment and readiness assessment up front. And so that's what interviews with board members and others, and then this with the staff voice, because that came out from the board members, is all part of the needs assessment. So what is needed? And then, as we've stated with the action items, that's what we actually put into effect of what we'll be doing for the capacity building. And so the annual reports will be something like this, that would look like this. So we won't be doing this massive amount of data collection as we go forward, because we've done this, but we will do, as we've stated as one of the action items, is following up with the staff members who are willing to be part of action planning and working group, and we will establish that so that we can continue to have our pulse on what their needs are and what those might be changing over time, so that we can also take into account what we're actually delivering and then what needs to be modified from this and what the additional needs might be across the different agencies. Absolutely.
What started this? This is great.
Who did
what? What started all of this? What prompted the research? I'm just curious.
In terms of the capacity building RFP that came out? So there's, as you probably know, there is a strand of evaluation called empowerment evaluation, which is really that capacity building. And so I guess our center and the philosophy is really to empower others to be able to do the work themselves, because we can't continuously do it for, but we want to do with and by, to translate it to by. And I think that part of the vision of the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Developmental Disability Boards and the previous evaluators as well was let's build that capacity for them. And our hope through this process was to really capture the voice of all those who are part of this, which includes board members, which includes the staff. And that's why our action items are all three of us, the evaluator, the staff, agencies, and the board, to make sure that we're all in it together. I don't know if that answers your question. I guess it's like everyone has come to the party and said, yay, we want to do this and embrace it and move it forward and take accountability for all the components of it, because we all have a stake in this, right? Yeah. Absolutely.
Lynn, this is Chandra. Can I also say something about the continuation of when we funded a system of care, why evaluation was important as well?
Yep, go ahead. Go ahead, Chandra.
Okay. So I also wanted to add, when we funded a system of care through our federal cooperative agreement, that was also a part of the sustainability plan for Champaign County to make sure that there was always a pulse on what agencies needed and how to build capacity and creating logic models. And so I just also wanted to say it was a continuation of that as well from the system of care grant as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I wanted to make two comments. One, to thank both the research team for working on this and conducting this assessment, and also all of the agencies and individual staff that participated. In reading on page 108, that there were 41 agency staff, 33 attending, with nearly 250 collective years of experience at 19 agencies. That number just astounded me, and it made me think of, not only is this a capacity building, but I see it as a capacity unleashing, because there's so much collective wisdom in that space. I would have just loved to be a fly on the wall and listen to it. And it just is a reminder to me of just how much brilliance and talent we have in this community around providing mental health and developmental disability services, and that this is an opportunity to really unleash that knowledge that everybody has in new ways to help evaluate the services. So thank you all so much for this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see how this, progresses over over the next year and into the future. I really hope, these agencies will be able to, just build and expand on everything they learn and, empower themselves to, not only just, learn from those micro learning trainings and build up their capacity, but also then hopefully, when they collaborate with other agencies, help build other agencies up and, take what they've learned and help them grow as well. But, I'm just really excited just to see, this beginning and seeing the next steps, forward.
What's going to happen with the data? I was looking at the action plan, and I see that you have, suggested actions, the evaluations in the agencies, but what are you all going to do with all of the data? Are you planning to share it with other agencies and from what you learned here and create other programs? What's going to happen as a result of this research?
So the report has the data essentially summarized from the needs assessment from the staff, and the action items are really about what did they say they needed. So we're going to focus on creating micro learnings, trainings, and so forth on the topic areas of interest. So storytelling was a big one, visualization, data management, those types of things. Obviously, we can't do it all in the first year. It's going to take actually multiple years to get that done. And so we will be developing those, and those will be publicly available. And we're also adding in a community of practice, which gets at what do you do with this collective wisdom, but also what do you do with the collective wisdom and those who don't have the collective wisdom and want to learn from it. So it's creating this community of practice and recognizing that there are so many limitations for the staff and agencies to say, well, we can create something like that that could be a virtual, right, making things available online, but also having in person because they did want to do this networking and so forth. So we're wanting to develop that as we bring along this working group and then bringing together those who want to contribute to that and have the time to and actually create additional space for them that we can and that the agencies can so that then that can be continuous and living and changing as it needs to over time. And so that's what several of those action items are under our category. And there are action items also under the agency category and then also under the board category. Because taking for example, collaboration, right? A lot want to collaborate, but there are legitimate barriers to that collaboration. And so how can we incentivize that? How can we create bridges to get over those barriers that are currently there, not only from an evaluation standpoint, but from a funding standpoint and also from an agency standpoint, that time, resources, staff, qualified staff, trained staff. And so I would say that where we're going from this is we're going to create the tools that have been requested and stated that they need, as well as creating that space and opportunity for the collaboration to occur within those communities of practice, and then also asking others who are vested parties in this to also create opportunities for demonstrating that, for example, that those partnerships are existing, and also to create potentially funding that actually says you must partner for this to occur to really incentivize that type of work, and not just expect it to happen when it's such a limitation. So, does that help?
Yeah, nice. That's what I wanted to know. What's going to happen? What are the next steps?
I see the conclusion, but I was thinking, what are the next steps? What are we going to do? Because there are some gaps in agencies here. Mm-hmm. So this is great. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and hopefully you saw the post-its that talk about the motivation that they have, but also like some of them love evaluation and some of them obviously don't, which I can understand, you know. So, but really wanting to give credit to where credit is due and all the great work that's currently occurring, and then what might be needed to get people to and agencies and the board and so forth to get to the next step for all of us to be in it together.
Data excites me. That's why I'm, yeah, numbers excite me.
Go ahead, Lynn.
So Leon and Kim and I meet with Dr. Dariotis every month, just once a month. If we only had one or two board members join us for that meeting, it might, you know, it's a cool discussion if you're really excited and want to. Yeah, we just can't have more than two.
All right, any other questions, comments? Oh, Molly says, yeah, bring her too.
Okay.
I think it'd be Molly and Lisa.
Molly and Lisa.
Yeah.
That's too many. No, it's not too many.
No, that's perfect number.
We could have a sign-up rotation so it's not a meeting.
Don't
so there's always only two of us.
It's also, like, I find myself very excited after our discussion, and it might be because it's on Fridays, but it also is could be because it is one of the most positive projects we have going. It feels like the right direction. I love the support you've provided so far, and looking forward to what happens next, which, you know, implementing some of these great ideas, so yay.
Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So with that, we can move on to the Expo 2023 year-end wrap-up on page 118. You know, surprisingly, even though there was a lot of other things going on that weekend, there was a lot of people that went to the expo. So I was really happy with the turnout while I was there. I don't know if Jane or Lynn wanted to talk about, you know, how this year went. It was. I'll make one other comment. I ended up seeing someone I'd never seen there before. It was one of the developmental pediatricians showed to the expo, which was really cool because you know they see all our children with like autism and mental health issues or behavioral issues, and so it was nice to see him attend. But yeah. Really good turnout this year. I was really happy with everything, but you know, I didn't see any costumes for Halloween weekend. You know,
yeah,
they were in costume.
Yeah, there were like a few costumes. I think it was hard because I think it was. I mean, it was in like our stuff. You know, hey, come in costume, but it just was, you know, wonky. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, there weren't too many costumes. I was there for setup, and then I don't know. I think I was there to like 12:30 or so. And yeah, I thought there was a nice turnout. Definitely when it opened at like 11, we had, you know, great attendance coming through right then. I didn't really hear any problems when I was there. I think we had all but maybe two of the vendors show up. Does that sound right? Yeah, I mean, and I think, of course, like I still think there's more room for growth as far as, you know, we could take over that other wing. You know, I know that I had brought up previously about doing like some adaptive sports, and that's something they're wanting to visit a little bit. I sent it to Lynn today, but I'd had some thoughts and stuff like that of some different things for next year. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's easy for me to, you know, look in and say, well, here's what I would do. But, you know, I do have some experience in event planning and expos and things like that. So sometimes I think I kind of know what I'm talking about. So hopefully we can just kind of tweak a couple of things. Again, I was a little disappointed in the lack of evaluation forms, and I'm not really sure the answer on how to do that. This year, they used some iPads, and they had people going around, and I still think people weren't interested in that, and I have voiced that sometimes people don't want to share their information. Sometimes people just want to attend. So I don't know. I don't know how we can gather more information besides keep asking. So... but yeah, I know in the past they've talked about getting more, you know, they feel like they need more people on the steering committee. I don't necessarily know that we need more people on the steering committee, but just maybe some new, fresh ideas. You know, at our wrap-up meeting, there was talk about, you know, changing the date and things like that, which, again, I'm always very vocal, to protect our staff because, you know, hey, let's do it in the spring. And I'm like, absolutely not. That's when we're doing, you know, applications and stuff. And so, so like I'm always the ogre. Why am I always the ogre in everything I'm involved in? But, you know, so I try to protect our staff because, you know, we do. We have, you know, three coordinators that are getting paid, I think, a pretty good salary to put this expo together. And I just want to make sure that, you know, our staff is able just to give wisdom and not maybe do some of the grunt work. But again, Lynn and I, Kim, a lot of times are on, well, Kim and I are on most meetings. Leon has visited a few meetings. I think we've had Chandra a couple times. So, you know, if you have any ideas, just send them through any of us and we'll be happy to share them. And I say I have broad shoulders, and if they are like, no, that's a stupid idea, I'll be like, okay. So, but yes, again, I think it was a successful event. I think it is something our community continues to need. And, you know, I think it's, like you said, it's interesting to see people come out that maybe have never come out or didn't even really know all the valuable resources we have in this community.
Is there a raffle if you turn in an evaluation?
They've done that some in the past. They had different raffle baskets and stuff like that. And that was more like, you know, pre-COVID when people actually had a piece of paper and a pen. And I don't know. I almost wonder if we should go back to that. But I don't know.
I feel like now's the days and era of where we like are constantly asked to do a survey at the end of a phone call or, mm-hmm. you know, like anytime you go somewhere, it's like, oh, can you fill out the survey? Can you fill out the survey? So I feel like people nowadays are just like, they see a survey and they're like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this. Like, I came here for this and I got this and I'm going home. Unless there's some kind of incentive for me.
And again, the survey is wonderful, but it did have several questions, you know, and I think sometimes people are like, oh no, I don't have time for that, you know? And again, you want to get some pertinent information. So what do you delete off of that? So that's hard.
How many questions were on there? Like more than 10, less than that?
I'd say 10 or more.
I feel like people would be fine answering like 5 questions. And I feel like that's it. Like it has to be something that takes like a minute and you're done, you know. And not long questions on the thing either. It has to be usually like a one sentence. This is it. Very short. What are your opinions or thoughts on it? Like very good, good, bad, poor, you know, stuff like
that. Always rough to get back. So definitely incentivize them. Keep them to 5 questions if you can. This is more best practices than actual research based, but all multiple choice, no short answers because they can't handle that a lot of the times. But incentivization, I mean, you're talking about, you got Oberweis giving out ice cream. That could be something. You just have a, you know, QR code, you scan it real quick, and also have paper copies for those who aren't really technologically
advanced. That was one of
advanced.
The suggestions that I jotted down one day. I'm one of these people that have post-it notes like all over my house, and so one day I like gathered all these notes and I typed up things in my phone. Was I think everyone who turns in a survey should get something, and maybe that's the antibacterial thing that has our logo and stuff on it. So everybody gets something, and then maybe every, I don't know, 5th person who puts one in the box, they get a bigger prize, whether that be Oberweis or something like that. And then you could then at the end of the day pull out 10 for a bigger, maybe a gift card or something. One of the comments I made too is we did have some donations from some local businesses and stuff like that. But, you know, one of them was for $10 off your salon purchase. Well, I would guess the smallest thing at that salon would be $100. I would probably throw it away. I mean, so again, that's something I'm like, I appreciate that we got some of these, but they got to have value across the board. I did share with Lynn today, we had an appetizer. I believe it was at Outback. Not everybody can maybe afford Outback. And also, Outback is legally handicap accessible. But I know 17 years ago when my mom was in a wheelchair, it was hard to take her to some of these restaurants, you know. So again, is that going to maybe, are we going to give something to someone who maybe wouldn't be able to use it? So, you know, how do we find a little bit more universal, you know, tchotchkes or, you know, whatever. So
I think the other thing is you could just give them options. Like, okay, you fill out the survey. Do you want like a $10 gift card to Oberweis, a custard cup or this, you know, whatever thing here we have you can take. And then the other thing you could do if you want to get – ask different questions more than 5. Do 5 questions. These are like 20 ones that we're going to hand out for these 5 questions, and then we're going to hand out these 5 different questions to other people to answer. This way, everyone, you're getting more responses, but they're very short. And so it may not be from the same people, but at least then you're getting those questions answered that you want. I don't know, I have ADHD, and if at the end of my day, I'm answering questions and reading and typing notes all day, the last thing I want to do is read more. And if there's more questions, it has to be short. It has to be like something that's easy to read that, you know, that I can answer pretty quickly. So I think, you know, on a weekend when people are wanting just to go have fun, they want something quick, and it's like, okay, here you go. Here's my answers. Cool. Yeah, you may make a comment, Lynn. Yeah.
Just that, you know, thank you, Jane, for pointing out that the role of staff and then the consultants in this. I think we do get really worn out during a period because there's so much, as maybe especially but people who are much closer to the work, there is something to pay every day. There's a mistake to deal, you know, just like there's a lot of activity around putting the expo together. So I get a little bit myopic in the fall, but then afterwards, hearing how much it means to people starts to bring me back to like, well, that, you know, this has some real value that even like we're at this point encouraged to bring the coordinators to a statewide coalition of self-advocates to talk to them about creating their own disability-centered annual expo events and how to do it. And I kind of like that. Like it should be celebrated, that piece of it, the fact that it is run by people with disabilities, it is about them, and the decisions are made as a collaborative, and then they just tell us what to do. Like that's really special, and I don't think anybody, at least anybody else in Illinois, is doing that with their public funding. So it turns out to be something to be really proud of, but I kind of get lost in the action and forget that part. So anyway.
All right. With that, thank you, Jane. Thank you, everybody that worked on the expo. Can't wait to see what this coming year will provide and show us. So. With that, we'll move on to Community Health Plan Coordinator 2023 report on pages 145 to 158.
The author of this report is often at your meetings on Zoom, but he's not here today. He's a baby. But he put this really nice report together for us about last year. We just met yesterday to talk about plans for this year. And I just want to say that he has such a diverse and even competing set of bosses. Like he's working for, I think he lists some, everybody here has a stake in this work and tells him how they want it done. And he handles it with grace. He's not sick of it. He's got even a passion for it. So a lot of our conversation yesterday was making a list of the names, not the organizations they work for, the names of people who can help make the survey part of it better this year, because the survey is there's a format. It's written by a physician in maybe Peoria. Each year he gives us an opportunity to suggest very light revisions. And we get demographic data on who fills out the survey, and it's mostly people like me. I mean, you can guess what that means. What's missing are men, people of color, people with disabilities, people with mental health issues, people who are actually affected by the shape of the community itself. So the things we heard in the fall from self-advocates with DD about, it turns out this community is not very welcoming of people with disabilities. Like a whole lot of the people working with those self-advocates are on the list of folks he's going to involve this year to get the health plan survey out, so that hopefully there's more input into the needs assessment and then the community health plan from people other than just me. I mean, you know, everybody has to do the community health plan every 3 years, and it's preceded by the needs assessment. Leon Bryson is very, very involved with that work on our behalf to try to get details about mental health needs, details which are not collected in that larger survey. So we're going to go tomorrow to meet with a class at U of I about a survey that he has designed with some other people to take to small groups of self-advocates and people with mental health issues. So it was such a positive meeting yesterday with this guy. And I mean, he put together a really nice report for you about 2023, but I'm much more excited about this year, because we really have to get to the work. But anyway, he's not here to ask questions of it, but there are some hyperlinks in the report to data that might be interesting to y'all. So.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the successes and other agency input. So I'll reserve the authority to limit individual participation to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes. Is there any other agency input at this time? Looks like there's no agencies here. Is there anyone online?
There's a lot of agencies on the Zoom, but they might be done with us.
Yeah.
Are any of y'all on the Zoom interested in giving input at this point? Or it's grown too late? Anyway.
All right. With that, I'll move on to Board of Board reports.
I guess I have one. I realized that since we didn't meet in December, I couldn't report on this, but I am... part of the University of Illinois Student Mental Health Community of Practice Committee that meets a few times a semester. And at the December meeting, Lynn and I have been invited to present to the committee about the Mental Health Board and what we do, try to kind of explain the structure and how we how we serve students on the campus. And it was really interesting to talk about some of the different ways that students both seek services from agencies that we fund, as well as ways that students often are involved as volunteers or interns or working for some organizations. But it was a really interesting presentation, because I think a lot of people on the committee commented that they didn't necessarily understand everything that the Mental Health Board did and the way that we function. And so it was, I think, very enlightening for a lot of the committee members, and a very fun time presenting with Lynn. I quite enjoyed it. Lynn, I don't know if you want to add anything about it.
It seems like so long ago, I've forgotten, but you're right. It was a very interesting set of questions, actually. Molly made a really cool PowerPoint presentation, which we might be able to use for other things.
Which Lynn helped with, for sure. But yeah, it was back on December 4th, so I almost forgot about it too. And I was like, wait a minute, this goes on board-to-board reports, because we did not meet in December.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. With that, I'll move on to county board board input. But Jen Straub is not here, so we don't have anyone for that. We'll move on to the next thing, which is the Champaign County DDB input. Is there any input they had for us?
Well, they met this morning and talked about a lot of the same content. Your comments about the personnel policy agenda were really interesting. I would like to follow up with them, but probably won't have time to do so until we have more revised information to share with them. They had a presentation from the Independent Service Coordination Unit, which is for this region is now Prairie Land. Until July, it was the Regional Planning Commission, which is right here in the building. The transition of those services to a different ISC unit has been really challenging, but mostly for the same reasons that RPC was having trouble doing the work, because the state just doesn't pay very well for those positions. So unfortunately, they have fallen further behind in securing services for people, or securing the waiver for people that pays for the services, which means that local dollars, DDB dollars mostly, will be continue to pay for people in that gap until they can. Yeah, it's. I didn't mention that at the DD board meeting, but that is one of they were talking about like much more urgent issues about people's well-being. But I was thinking about the money, so. That is one to watch. It was a good presentation, a really good discussion, but is also really serious. If that piece of the state DD system isn't working very well, we do pay the price, and the people receiving services absolutely pay the price first. So you all might hear more about that as the year goes on. Otherwise, it was very similar to this content.
All right, we'll move on to other board announcements and input. No. All right, with that, thank you everyone for being here. I will move to adjourn. See you next week.
Second.
Next.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night. Bye. Yeah, next week we have a...
Bye, all.
Recording stopped.